The only troubling aspect is the use of the single term spouse.
State lawmakers delve into the same-sex marriage debate. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 17th. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Alaska air taxi pilots say an IRS fix to a cumbersome regulation doesn't go far enough.
It is unclear at this time if it's going to help anyone.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD. Paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov or on Facebook. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
3 years ago, the United States Congress repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell and allowed gay men and women to openly serve in the military. Their husbands and wives are also entitled to the same federal benefits they would get if they were heterosexual. But in Alaska, these spouses are not recognized because of a ban on gay marriage that was added to the state constitution. Today, the Alaska House wrestled with that tension when it took up legislation extending a small perk to military families. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports that a measure adding same-sex partners into the bill was rejected.
One of the facts of life in the armed services is you may be asked to move a lot. On average, military families move 10 times more often than civilian ones. The Military Spouse Residency Relief Act was introduced to make those moves easier and to show that Alaska wants to cater to the troops who are stationed here. All the bill does is let military spouses keep their driver's licenses, saving them the trouble of going to the DMV. Even the lawmakers who want the bill modified like the overall idea. Anchorage Democrat Max Gruenberg made that clear on the House floor on Monday.
The bill itself is non-controversial, and I strongly support the bill and will be voting for the bill.
Gruenberg saw just one problem with it.
The only troubling aspect is the use of the single term spouse.
Because Alaska has a ban on same-sex marriage, the term spouse does not allow the partners of gay servicemen to take advantage of the benefit, even if they married in another state. Gruenberg offered an amendment to the bill making it explicit that gay military couples should get the driver's license exemption too. The state of Alaska already includes same-sex partners in its employee benefits because of a 2005 court decision, and Gruenberg's measure copied that language and applied it to the military. Same-sex partners would have to meet a list of conditions to qualify, like having lived together for at least a year and co-managing their finances. Gruenberg said he tailored his amendment to avoid getting into a debate over gay marriage in Alaska, and he argued that it follows legal precedent and the military's own rules.
We're looking at, once again, following the lead of the military, all branches of the service in this country, and I think the trend of most Americans who would like to see people treated equally.
Other members of the Democratic minority agreed and stood up in support of the bill. Representative Les Guerra of Anchorage framed it as a civil rights issue.
It's a matter of respect for people who serve for our armed forces, regardless of who they choose to love.
But many members of the Republican-led majority were unfriendly to the amendment, including bill sponsor Doug Isaacson. He said the courts are still weighing the issue of same-sex rights, and that until they decide differently, the relationship between husband and wife should be elevated.
Our state constitution, as we've heard, makes a distinction. We prioritize according to what the voters have told us. And the voters have told us that the definition of marriage is between one man and one woman.
Isaacson represents North Pole, and the Eielson Air Force Base is part of his district. He said there is widespread support for the bill as written.
Even with the gay spouses, none have asked me to extend this benefit to others. They recognize that in order to help the majority of the spouses who are affected, this is a necessary bill.
The amendment ultimately failed on a 14-22 vote. While no Republicans spoke in favor of the measure, three, Kathy Munoz of Juneau, Mike Hawker of Anchorage, and Lindsay Holmes, also of Anchorage, broke with their caucus to support it. Bob Herron, a Bethel Democrat who caucuses with the majority, was the only member of his party to vote against it. The bill itself passed unanimously and will now be sent to the Senate. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
A co-chair of the House Finance Committee says he and fellow majority members are discussing possible options for addressing the state's pension obligation. Representative Alan Osterman, a Republican from Kodiak, says everything is on the table, including possible contribution increases by municipalities, a proposal from Governor Sean Parnell, and an extension of the time horizon for payments. Osterman could not say when a firm proposal might be put forth. The session is scheduled to end on April 20th. Parnell proposed taking $3 billion from savings and putting it toward addressing the state's nearly $12 billion pension shortfall. Response to the idea has been mixed. Some lawmakers support a big cash infusion to help lower annual payments, while others are wary of taking so much from savings. The Alaska State House unanimously condemned language used by the chief of the Environmental Protection Agency to describe gifts she received in the state. In the process of describing the strictest of ethics guidelines, Gina McCarthy said she received a jar of moose meat in Alaska that could, quote, gag a maggot. She also acknowledged throwing away a pin she was given in North Pole and used an expletive to describe the action. State representatives expressed concern that those comments indicate an anti-Alaska bias. McCarthy apologized to Alaska's congressional delegation last week. Members said they were disappointed by the comments but accepted the apology. The IRS has given a sliver of ground in how it has applied tax rules to air taxi flights. Senator Mark Begich is calling it a win for small air carriers, but Joy Journay of the Alaska Air Carriers Association says the concession is less than it appears.
It is unclear at this time if it's going to help anyone.
The association has said the rules were unclear on when a small plane operator has to collect federal excise taxes from passengers. Several air taxi businesses say they didn't know they were supposed to collect the money until they were audited and hit with tax bills that in some cases exceeded $1 million. The IRS last week wrote a letter to Begich saying it will refund any excise tax air services paid for day tours. The IRS letter doesn't say whether it will also refund the penalties and interest audited businesses had to pay. And an IRS spokesman said the agency didn't want to talk about its decision. But the letter says the agency is only lifting the tax retroactively. Next month, it will apparently revert to its previous interpretation of the rules, which Journay calls baffling.
The letter issued to Senator Begich from the IRS does not clear up any of the ambiguous language in the regulation or address any of the items that the Air Carriers Association has asked them to address for multiple years.
The IRS has previously said whether the tax applies to a day trip depends in part on the purpose of the trip. If the passengers deplane to see a glacier or watch bears, the air service doesn't have to collect the tax, but if they land to fish, that might be taxable if the pilots fly to the same places with some degree of regularity. The way an agency has defined regularity has also exasperated air carriers. The state of Alaska filed a lawsuit last week against the federal government for rejecting Governor Sean Parnell's application to explore the geology of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The U.S. Interior Department says the window for such oil and gas exploration in the refuge closed in 1987. The 1980 law that created the refuge left it to a future Congress to decide whether to allow petroleum development on the coastal plain, and Congress has repeatedly rejected the idea. Parnell argues the law still allows exploratory activity. The case was filed in U.S. District Court in Anchorage. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Arctic Winter Games get underway in Fairbanks.
You are stepping forward. You're representing your country in your event.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
There's a good feeling you get when you give, and each year more Alaskans are supporting things they love when they file online for their PFD. Alaskans like you donated $2.5 million last year to strengthen education, help families in need of food and shelter, and protect the most vulnerable among us. You even shared your permanent fund dividends with public radio to keep quality programming alive and well. This year, the PFD is expected to be a lot bigger. So come on, love Alaska. Pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
A Hella skiing guide remains in critical condition as of Monday afternoon after being buried in an avalanche near Haines over the weekend. It's the third Hella skiing accident in as many years to injure or kill extreme mountain skiers in the area. From member station KHNS, Margaret Friedenauer reports.
Alaska State Troopers say 31-year-old Aaron Karatis was on a popular ski run west of Haines when the avalanche occurred about 11 a.m. Saturday. Karatis was carried about 800 feet and buried at least 7 feet deep, according to Trooper spokesperson Beth Ibsen. Karatis was acting as a guide on a heliski tour with Haines Company Southeast Alaska Backcountry Adventures, known as SEBA. Four clients were waiting on the top of the slope and not caught in the avalanche. Other SEBA staff immediately began searching for Karatis, and another helicopter and more guides came to assist. Ibsen says Karatis was located within 20 minutes.
If you're going to survive an avalanche, it's going to be because the people that you're with find you in time.
Karatis was wearing a beacon that helped rescuers find him quickly, Ibsen said.
What you have is you have locator beacons on you, and you have to turn it on. You have to turn the knob to where it receives a signal, and that's why you kind of, you know, like with the metal detector, with this, you're trying to receive that signal that that other beacon is sending out.
Ibsen said Karatis was unresponsive when located and CPR was started. He was flown by a SEBA helicopter to the Haines Airport and transported by ambulance to the local clinic where CPR continued. He was stabilized and medevaced to Providence Medical Center in Anchorage. As of late Monday, the hospital still listed him in critical condition, although there was no more information about his injuries available. Friends of Karatis wrote on Facebook they had been in communication with his family, who said he was on a breathing machine and had not regained consciousness. SEBA owners did not want to speak about the incident, but issued a statement Sunday saying normal avalanche response procedures were followed. Ibsen said a trooper visited the scene of the avalanche Saturday and interviewed SEBA clients and responders about the incident. She said the trooper investigation is complete because they found no sign of criminal intent or negligence. According to the SEBA website, Karatis grew up in Bend, Oregon. He graduated from the University of Utah and has been working in the heliski industry for about a decade. He joined SEBA in 2013. Just over a year ago, another SEBA guide was killed in a cornice collapse on a mountain near Haines. That incident also injured two skiers. And in 2012, a guide and client with a different heliski company were killed in an avalanche, also outside Haines. Reporting from Haines, I'm Margaret Friedenauer.
Students at the University of Alaska Anchorage are organizing a panel discussion this week to highlight the problems of domestic violence and sex assault in Alaska. The conversation is part of the National No More campaign. Student coordinator Simona Gertz told APRN's Lori Townsend that leading up to the Wednesday discussion, she issued her fellow students a challenge.
And the challenge is to say why you are going to say no more to domestic violence and sexual assault. So on our Facebook page, we started to get pictures coming in from students and other people around the state saying why they're saying no more. And it's pretty inspiring and it's exciting to see.
What kind of reaction have you had as you're building momentum for this panel discussion that will happen on Wednesday and the campaign itself? What are you hearing on campus?
Wow, it's been very humbling because I've met so many students who I would have never had the opportunity to meet before. They've shared with me their personal stories. And some of them who I've known for over 3 years who have shared their personal stories, and I had no idea that they were ever a victim of sexual assault or domestic violence. And I really feel that this is something that will be lasting because the student interest thus far, and it's only been a few weeks that we've co-branded with No More, it's just been overwhelming. And they're really excited to see something like this on campus. And we've already had several meetings. We're going to meet on Sunday. We're going to cover the campus in our no more signs and our messages, so that when students return from spring break, then they're going to say, "What is this no more?" And it's going to be a great turnout. And in the community, I've spoken with many officials actually on JBEAR, some of whom will be in attendance on Wednesday night, which is really exciting because I think the military and Alaska have a lot in common in terms of their exceedingly high rates of domestic violence and sexual assault when compared to national averages. So it's just going to be a great night for everyone to collaborate.
When you talk to other young women on campus, are they aware of the dubious distinction that Alaska has as, you know, leading the nation as in these terrible rates of violence and sexual assault against women? Are young women on campus aware, and what do they say about it, especially women who may be coming from outside of the state?
The students who I've talked to or who have approached me so far, they are aware currently. We did actually go off campus and speak with local people who aren't students, and they were absolutely shocked by the 59% rate that was released through the Alaska Victimization Survey. And, disgusted and appalled. I don't think that they're even, you know, many in the community are even aware of the significance of this issue. And maybe if they are, they think that it's only associated, you know, in the villages or something. But as I've learned, it's right here, you know. It's been in the classroom with me for over 3 years, and I had no idea.
When you talk to other young women about this problem, are they, beyond being aware, are they also making a plan for how to keep themselves safe?
Well, so far, that's actually going to be the second part of our civic engagement project, which is part of our senior project. It's between myself and another student, Kristen Spire. And the second part of our capstone project, as you will, is to kind of increase the communication and the awareness on campus about the resources that are being provided by the University Police Department. There are many. We did have the opportunity to meet at length with Deputy Chief Munn of UPD, and he was amazing. And I think that more people knew about the resources that are already available to them on campus, the more they would be used. And so, yeah, that's actually the second part of our campaign this semester.
Simona Gertz is coordinating a panel discussion on domestic violence and sexual assault for Wednesday at 6:30 at the UAA Consortium Library.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
The 2014 Iditarod Trail Awards banquet was held last night in Nome. Hobo Jim entertained and the crowd ate. An MC of the evening, John Handeland, presented the awards earned by those who raced and survived Iditarod 42. The crowd heard stories of the trail, the brutal section of the gorge and the burn, the lack of snow from Old Woman to the finish line, the wind, the glare ice. Third place finisher Mitch Seavey said the most challenging portion of the trail was when the winds hit heading to safety, but he said his dogs seemed to enjoy the trail.
I would have to say that I think Ali Zirkel and Dallas Seavey are among the most toughest mushers I've ever raced with, and my hat's off to them. I just am never going to get used to losing the women and children.
Ali Zirkel spoke of the highs and lows on the morning she finished the race. She told the crowd she almost did not make it to safety because the winds were so bad. When she got there, she didn't see Jeff King's name on the clipboard.
About 10 minutes later, Jeff walked in the door, and I gave Jeff a huge hug. And Jeff and I aren't friends. We're not good friends or anything. I wouldn't sit and have a cup of coffee with Jeff King and talk about how his day was, but I was pretty happy to see Jeff.
King scratched the 2014 Iditarod only 22 miles from the finish line at safety. The eventual champion was oblivious to the drama that unfolded that morning. Dallas CV pulled into safety thinking King had won.
I had seen the clipboard there. It had Allie's name on it. Who bothers to look if they actually sign in and out? I did not see Jeff's name on it, but I also knew that the checkpoint had no power and they were struggling just to be able to take care of us and get us through the checkpoint. And they had passed me on Snow Machine on the way to safety. So I figured, shoot, Jeff's moving so fast, they probably missed him. He probably went right on through the checkpoint before they showed up. Didn't think anything more of it. My only focus was getting me and my team to the finish line.
Dallas CV made it to the finish line in first place and in record time.
I think I may be the first person to make it to Nome first and be the last person to know that I won the Iditarod.
49 mushers finished the 2014 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Health groups took advantage of Iditarod visitors last week by holding a vaccination drive at the Nome Recreation Center. KNOM Zachariah Hughes reports.
Bobby Jo Connor is a nurse working with the Village Health Services Immunization Program out of Norton Sound Regional Hospital. She says the annual Lonnie O'Connor Iditarod basketball tournament is an excellent opportunity to raise awareness.
And I found this an opportunity to have lots of people from our region traveling here, not only to participate as players, but also to attend and, you know, support their families. And it also brings people in from Nome to come and watch their family and friends. So I saw that as an opportunity to get some more exposure out there and make vaccines accessible for people that would like to get caught up on their vaccines while they're here.
The vaccine drive also capitalizes on the Iditarod's connection with the 1925 serum run, in which dog teams were used to help deliver medicine for diphtheria. Along with influenza, diphtheria is one of the main diseases that decimated native populations across Alaska in the 19th and 20th centuries. And Connor stresses that while it's easy to think of those health dangers as being confined to the past, they're still a very real public health concern.
The most important thing is just, I think, is talking to people about the, you know, the real fear of that these diseases are still present in the world, and they can still come into the state of Alaska, into our region, and do a lot of devastation.
The vaccine drive had some high-profile help this year. Iditarod mushers Allie Zirkel, Martin Boozer, and Robert Sorley all carried serum samples with them along the trail to help raise awareness. In Nome, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The 2014 Arctic Winter Games officially got underway on Sunday with a gala opening ceremony before a standing room only crowd at the Carlson Center. Competition began today. KOAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
The ceremony took on the feel of a rock concert complete with laser light show as athletes from the nine regions competing in the games stepped on stage after being introduced by Alaska Native brothers Philip and Steve Blanchette, while a throbbing electronic beat blasted out at high volume.
Yes, introducing Team Greenland!
As athletes made their way to the floor, many of them, like young people everywhere, began dancing to the beat.
Team Alberta North!
It seemed the crowd was cheering more loudly with every team that was introduced.
Team Northwest Territory!
Some contingents were big, like Northwest Territories, with 347 participants. Some were smaller, like
Nunavik, Quebec!
Some of the flags depicted symbols of the indigenous peoples of the region. Others were national flags, like the Russian tricolor, carried by
Team Yamal.
But of course, they saved the best for last, and the crowd was ready when it came time to introduce the home team.
Team Alaska!
The music was mainly techno and urban, but some featured indigenous drums and instrumentals, in keeping with the game's theme that blends native and Western cultures, like this one. It's entitled Bubblegum by Pamua, a Yupik group from Unalakleet. Listen closely and you'll hear the seal call. Respect and regard for all nationalities and cultures was a common theme for the ceremony, like the games themselves. The North Pole High School Choir sang the national anthem or equivalent of each of the contingents participating in the games. The unifying theme was also reflected in many of the remarks given during the ceremony, like those in the invocation by the Reverend Anna Frank, an Athabascan from Minto and now retired Episcopalian clergywoman.
Creator, you made us in your image. Look with compassion on the whole human race. You gave us this land for our heritage. Bless this land.
And this from Senator Lisa Murkowski.
You are stepping forward. You're representing your country in your event. And these are the moments that you look back at with great pride, and know that we share that pride with you.
Governor Sean Parnell echoed the theme of unity.
And as you compete, remember a couple things. One, when you eat this first day or two, you're going to be eating in teams. By the end of the week, you're going to be eating together, just like life.
The final unifying words were left to Wendell Schiffler, the Fairbanksan who's vice president of the Games International Committee and a major force in bringing them back to the Golden Heart City. He spoke the words that all the athletes and everyone else in attendance were waiting for.
Now, let the games begin.
In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, Lorelei Kanin and Zachariah Hughes in Nome, and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
And by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Over 800 Alaskans are diagnosed with serious brain injuries each year. 150 will die from their injuries. A variety of activities such as snow machining, riding ATVs, and playing sports carry risks of brain injury or concussion. Prevention, diagnosis, and treatment are important. Safety is a way of life. Think ahead. Protect your brain. Learn more at alaskabraininjury.net. This message brought to you by the Alaska Brain Injury Network.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.